Stay tuned for The Lynn Show. Today, I'm going to continue to talk about modeling, that is, modeling the same-sex parent, how we choose to copy the ways of being in the world that we see in our same-sex parent, and what possible prices we might pay for that choice, even when that choice is the best possible choice that we can make. And I'm also going to play an interview that I did with Robert Mann. Robert is an independent actor, screenwriter, director, and producer who has raised the money for, written the screenplay for, acted in, directed in, and produced two independent films, both of which have gotten play and made some money. And you can hear the story of how he discovered this obsession, this way of being in the world. So if that is of interest to you, hang on, because here come the show. Figuring out who you really are, and if you haven't been acting as who you really are, how you can. It's not rocket science to know that if there are aspects about yourself which you have had to keep hidden, then that takes energy. Some of the energy which you could be using to be doing whatever it is you want to be doing in your life that you may or may not be able to do. So, in all of these shows, well, most of these shows, I am spending the first half of them talking about the things that get between us and being who we really are. The reasons, the very good reasons, that we might, all of us, be pretending in some ways, either to be things that we're not, or not to be things that we are. This happens to all of us, and most of us are even unaware of the fact that we have chosen to hide qualities, ways of being, things that we could be from the rest of the world and, in many cases, from ourselves. I'm fond of saying the best way not to be able to do what you want is not to know what it is. And so we have this clever unconscious which keeps this information from us. So we're in very little danger of expressing it. Last week, I talked about modeling. That is to say, copying the parent of the same sex. And I explained that if you loved your parent of the same sex and if your parents were happy together, then the chances are very good that you identified with the parent of the same sex, and that although there are some downsides to that as well, that's far and away the best solution, because you are really in many significant ways just like the parent of the same sex. And identifying with that person confirms that, and there's no tug of war or out of syncness. One of the things I said was that one of the problems with identifying with a same-sex parent is that there may be things about that parent that you really don't want to be, but children are under the misapprehension that we must take the entire package. If we identify with this person, we have to be all the things that they are. And that can be problematic when there is a quality or two that we'd rather not have. I suggested that if you were listening in the week that I did the exercise called the family pie, and if you did your family pie, then you could look at that and see if you wrote in your own pie piece qualities that were similar, maybe even identical, to the qualities that you wrote in the pie piece of your same-sex parent. And if you did, then the chances are good that you identified with that parent. Today I'm going to talk a little bit about the downside of modeling a same-sex parent, and also, if I have time, talk about anti-modeling, which is to say modeling the opposite-sex parent. So if, as I said, your same-sex parent was someone you loved or admired, then you probably modeled yourself after him or her. But if that parent also had qualities that you despised, you may be stuck in a difficult double bind until you understand that you don't have to take the whole package. Now, you know, if you never ask yourself these questions, if you never say, let me see, my mom is a kind and gentle and caring person who never has a mean thing to say about anyone, and I'm really like that too, but my mother wanted to open a business, and she never could because she never could commandeer the energy that it took to do that. And I find that I too am, well, I call myself lazy. You know, I can't quite get it up to do what I want to do. So this would be an example of having taken the whole package and not realize that you don't have to take that one aspect about energy, and you can still keep the kind and gentle and never say a mean word part of the package. Roger was a client of mine, and he's actually a perfect example of this dilemma. Roger loved his dad, and his dad loved him. They shared a lot of interests, and they spent a lot of time together, and Roger was treated very well by his father. So he had no personal reason to be angry at him or to disown him, and so he identified lock, stock, and barrel with his dad. However, his dad was constantly critical of his mother and didn't even try to hide the fact that he cheated on her. Well, Roger also loved his mother, and he felt responsible for her. So when he got older, he had a real dilemma. He identified with his dad, but he didn't want to be the kind of person who hurt his mom. So Roger solved this problem by modeling his father in every single way, except he never married. without realizing it, Roger was afraid that if he married, he'd become just like Dad and hurt his wife. So until he was 40, this choice hadn't been much of a problem for him. He'd been busy building his career, he was successful, he was happy. But when he decided that he really did want to get married, then he ran smack up against this problem of having to deny some of the qualities that he got from his dad, or that he, some of that package that contained this quality that he didn't want. So in your family pie, you may find that you share all or most of the qualities that you've attributed to a same-sex parent, and there may be one or two traits that you absolutely don't want to share. The problem with this is that, as I've said now several times today, kids think they have to take the whole package. So it is confronting this reality that a lot of the things that you are because you modeled this parent. Last week when I was talking about modeling the same-sex parent, I talked about the fear of betrayal of the same-sex parent. Kids feel, and they generally demonstrate this later in life, that if they do something that the beloved and modeled parent couldn't do, that it's a kind of betrayal of the parent. It's like rubbing their nose in the fact that this could be done. See, I married, I have a happy marriage, my wife and I love each other and are good to each other. Why couldn't you do this too, Dad? So, again, when we're children, we don't want to do anything to hurt or annoy or anger or embarrass the parent, especially the beloved parent, especially the parent we've identified with and modeled. So if there's a quality that we want to demonstrate, but it's one that the same-sex parent could never demonstrate, the desire not to insult. There was a client of mine kept saying he didn't want to insult his beloved parent. So it is coming to terms with that. Being able to recognize that doing this in your life is not an insult. It is a demonstration that the other person, the parent that you modeled, might have been able to do it if they had done the work that you are now doing. And listening to this show and maybe doing your family pie and thinking about who you may have modeled, that's the work. So are you doing the work? Because if you are, changes are in your future. Well, maybe you don't want to change. I always go under the assumption that everybody has a change that they want to make. Something that they are doing that they want to stop doing, or something that they want to do that they can't make themselves do. That's the premise of pretty much all the work I do. And of course, as a psychotherapist, oh my gosh, I'll bet I haven't said anything about myself in this show. So, yes, I am a psychotherapist licensed in both Los Angeles, well, in the state of California, and also in the state of Florida. And while I have been practicing for probably 30 years, most of that time in the conventional way, people coming to the office, sitting opposite me and talking. But for the last 10 or 11 years, I have worked exclusively on the telephone. People call me. They call me from all over the country, and we do the work on the phone. Maybe you think, like a lot of people, that that is not effective, but I have found it to be very effective. And to answer the questions of people who say, boy, are you sure you can do that without seeing the body language? I wrote an article about it called Psychotherapy on the Go. And that article is on my website, which is thelynshow.com, T-H-E-L-Y-N-N-E, S-H-O-W. Don't leave out the E, because there is another Lynn out there with a website also called The Lynn Show. So this is the L-Y-N-N-E show. And if you go up on my website and you're curious about psychotherapy on the phone, you can click on the Psychotherapy on the Go article and read it. If you're curious about me, there's all kinds of information about what I have done and am doing. And there's also an opportunity to listen to a little bit of my book. I wrote a book called When You Can, You Will, Why You Can't Always Do What You Want to Do and What to Do About It. And you can buy that book from me, or you can click on my email and say, I want to buy the book, or the workbook. There's a 70-page workbook that can either be a kind of standalone, because it has all the exercises from the book, or you can use it with the book. And there's an audiobook, which you can listen to a little bit of on my website. There's also the CD that contains 11 of my songs, three of which you'll hear in this show. The one that opens the show, You Really Can. The one that closes the show, I Won't Go With a Whimper, which is also the title tune of the CD. And a little bit of Behind the Woman, There's a Child, which I'm going to play in just a few seconds. I'm going to play a little bit of it as a break between all this talk about changing and modeling and finding yourself and the interview that I did with Robert Mann when I was in L.A. a couple of weeks ago. Robert, as we imply in the beginning of the interview, is sort of related to somebody I'm sort of related to, and I've known him a fairly long time. Robert is an actor, a screenwriter, a director, a producer of several of his own independent films. He's a stand-up comedian, and if there's anything that can be done with performance and film, Robert has done it, is doing it, will continue to do it. And I ask him what I ask everybody else, which is, how did this happen to you? And it's a really interesting story, and Robert is funny and charming and has a lot to say about making a living or a life in the art of film. So here, a short break where you can hear a little bit of Behind the Woman, and then my interview with Robert Mann.
I can work the whole damn day, way into the night. Look like I don't need to play. I make out all right. And although I can fool you with my grown-up woman style, behind the woman there's a child. Tonight, 'cause just like and the brightest smile. Behind the woman, there's a child.
So here I am in Los Angeles with Robert Mann.
Yes.
Who is almost family.
Almost. Without the contract.
Yeah. He's almost related to somebody that I'm almost related to.
That's true.
So I know you a long time now, Robert.
Yes, you have.
Well, they know each other. They're living together 17 years.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll bet I know you almost 20 years. My God.
Maybe.
That's pretty amazing.
It's amazing.
You are at least 20, aren't you?
I am. You knew me when I was an infant.
I did. It did. So Robert is an actor and a director and a writer. And I've been explaining to him that I do this series of interviews with artists. And I interview people who make their living or their life with their art. And it sounds to me like you are actually making your living with your art now, although I knew you when you were making your life with it, but not your living. Isn't that true?
Kind of. It's getting better and better.
Yeah.
You know, 20 years later, it's that overnight success story.
Yes, that's right, that's right.
Yeah.
Okay, so what I always ask the people that I interview and what I'm mostly interested in is how you got captured by the art. I mean, since I know you, you have been dedicated to this. So I know that it's it is the passion in your life that you were captured by it. So I like to know how it happened, how you found it, how it found you, how you discovered that this was important for you, that kind of stuff.
It happened when I was a kid, and it's weird because when you talk about something like this, I don't think you find it; it finds you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's instilled in you on some level, spiritual level. But when I was around 12, 13. My mother was an actress, and she was dating a director. And so I got to hang out at the sets, and I used to read her lines, and she would rehearse them with me. And going back and forth to the studio, I would be involved. Well, the director then gave me my first camera. So then I just started shooting things.
Wow.
And when I was on set and watching, you know, watching them do what they were doing, to me it was like magic. It was like, oh my God, it was like a great magician. Oh, you can do that? And then he had me double up as one of the lead characters on a close-up shot with my mother and I walking. So the character was drunk in a wide shot, and you would see them, the character and the girlfriend, stumbling around. Now remember, I'm only like 13,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So the character was probably 22, 23. So the director says, oh yeah, just put on his pants and his shoes, and my mom was going to put on the other character's dress and her shoes. And I'm thinking, well, how is it? I'm not, you know, this guy. They're going to know the difference. And but he just shot very close up on the feet, and then he told me, just act drunk, so I stumbled along. And then when I saw the screen and he cut it all together, then he cut back to the wide, I go, oh, look at that. And I'm going to my mom. That's my feet. Those are my feet. I'm telling all my friends, right?
Yeah.
But it looked like it was the other characters. So the magic of that just kind of instilled in me, and I just thought it was fascinating how you could fake all this stuff and make it look real. And I think that's it. It's just play. It's just, you know, when you're playing army or whatever you're playing. And to me, I took my camera and I would just shoot anything. I would shoot a dog, I'd shoot a leaf, I'd shoot myself. We got into a dark room and with sparklers because I wanted to see how dark I could get in, what kind of lighting would affect that I could get with the sparklers, and just things like that. And then,
so you were in school with yourself, essentially. I mean, you were studying, literally, you were discovering this stuff for yourself.
Yeah, and at that time, since I had an 8mm camera, Super 8mm camera, it was before the video came out, I would do what was called edit in camera. So I wouldn't even cut the film. I would just have my scenes, and I knew I'd cut at this point. So we'd rehearse it with my friends, and we'd make a movie, and we'd just have it cut in camera. So I'd have a wide shot, and we'd stop at a certain point, and I'd just stop the camera. then I'd come in for the close-up, and I'd start the camera again.
Okay, so you were already directing and editing, right, at the same time that you were shooting.
Yeah.
You were already doing the whole thing.
Mm-hmm. It was all in my mind. It wasn't really so much on paper. But
all in your mind. That's exactly right. But you were creating it, what was in your mind,
mm-hmm.
right? A finished product, essentially.
Yeah, essentially, yeah. And then I started getting to editing. Then I started shooting, being able to trim stuff, and I'd be there splicing my little thing and had my projector.
And how old are you now?
Probably into like 15, 16 now, you know, 14.
So you're already making movies.
I made hundreds of little short films of family and friends.
Wow.
Yeah.
So there was never any question about what you wanted to do? Or did you, on the side, you thought maybe I'll be an accountant?
Well, on the side, I also, you know, had this wonderful dream of being Joe Namath, you know,
really?
And winning a Super Bowl. Yeah, I know.
I just looked down at him. He's just, and he's this slender guy. Yeah.
The physical stature wasn't right.
Your body didn't cooperate.
Didn't cooperate.
But your mind cooperated with this other thing.
Yeah, it's just fun, you know, and so that's kind of how it happened. And when it came time to make a decision in college, because I'm not the biggest guy, you know, 5'11", 165, or whatever it is. I figured, well, you know, I'll probably get smashed playing football, so maybe I should just put all my energy into the arts now. And that's kind of what happened. I became a theater major with a visual arts minor, and so I did film and theater, and just kind of combined all of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so, all right, so now we have you exiting college with your degrees under your belt.
Yes.
But
which, by the way, mean nothing in this field.
Right, yes, right.
They don't mean anything.
Right.
Yes.
Yes, nobody is asking you where you went to school and what grades you got and what degrees you have. When they don't care.
They don't care. They just say, you know, audition, read this line, or let me see your reel, or whatever it is.
Well, but...
Let me regress on that.
Yeah.
I got the training, and that was valuable to me. The actual degree doesn't mean anything in this business, but the training did, and so I felt comfortable with that.
Well, I'm interested in that because what I'm thinking is that by the time you got to college, you had more hands-on experience with the stuff you were going to do than a lot of the people who must have been going to school with you. Isn't that true?
Some did. You know,
some other people found it the way you did and been doing it all their lives.
Yeah, but very few, and you know, you went to college and you kind of went down that road. And also, when I went to college, I took animation classes.
Mm.
You know, I took directing classes.
Things that you couldn't have taught yourself.
Yes, and I would get other points of view. And even philosophy classes would help. And psychology classes to understand the psyche of a character.
Yeah, motivation.
Yeah, and sociology. I was a social minor also. So all of those formed ideas for me and how to create a world of fiction.